Thanks indeed, Ciara. In a couple of minutes, Ciara, we'll do that Kildare County Council terms and conditions, so if you just hang in there for the moment as well. I want to tell people what's coming up. Nick Henderson of the Irish Refugee Council, they've just published their annual 2020 review. We've been contacted by a listener in Kilmead who said there's widespread antisocial activity going on in the community by young people, ranging from the killing of wild birds to basically environmental issues as well. We'll be hearing about Kildare County Council's decarbonisation plans with Green Party Councillor Peter Hamilton. We'll have our Free Fuckle Friday with Ciara and Owen. We have our Poem of the Day, which is racing related given the week we're in it. And of course, Dara Fitzpatrick will be marking your car on day four of the Punchestown Festival. But first of all, ahead of Ciara Noble and the terms and conditions which local authority tenants in Kildare must apply according to Kildare County Council, we want to bring you back in time, because we were contacted, I think, by Michael Dempsey it was, who said, Clem, here's a snatch of what the great Arkle Millhouse rivalry was about. Remember, Arkle, great, regarded as the greatest chaser of all time, and Millhouse, who was bred outside Punchestown, but trained in England, are giving rise to the greatest Ireland-England rivalry that we've ever seen, other than maybe the 1988 European Soccer Championships and World Cups and stuff like that. But here's how things unfolded. They met, I think, about three times in Gold Cup action, with Arkle winning, I think, all of them. And here was the first one in 1964.
Millhouse is over the leader from Arkle second. They've got two fences left to jump now in the Gold Cup, with Millhouse the leader from Arkle, and a long way back is Parcell, then King's Nephew. This is the second last fence, and they're still both full of running. Still going, great guns, both of them. It's Millhouse on the inside, jumps it only just ahead of Arkle. Now they're rounding the home turn, and this is it. And Willie Robinson's got his whip out, and Pat Taff is shaking up Arkle. And this is the race now to the last fence. It's Arkle on the stand side for Ireland, and Millhouse for England on the far side. And this is it, with Arkle just taking the lead as they come to the last fence. It's going to be Arkle if he jumps it. Arkle coming to the last now, and Arkle a length clear, and Millhouse is over and clear. Millhouse is trying to challenge him again, but it's Arkle on the stand side. Millhouse over on the far side, coming up towards the line, and Arkle is holding him. Arkle going away now from Millhouse. This is the champion. This is the best we've seen for a long time. Arkle is the winner of the Gold Cup. Millhouse is second, and then a long gap before the 1960 winner. Parcell comes up into third place, and finally King's Nephew. And I've never heard such cheers from the stands at Cheltenham as Arkle proves himself the champion chaser in the British Isles.
There you go, and history began, the greatest chaser of all time. And even though the incredible thing was that Millhouse was regarded as the English horse, and Pat Taff aboard, Strachan's Pat Taff aboard, the great, great Arkle, incredible. Millhouse was actually, as Liam Kenny told us in our virtual history walk around Punchestown earlier, or was it just last week or earlier this week? Earlier this week, or last Tuesday, that Millhouse was actually bred here in Ireland at Punchestown. So was as Irish as Arkle, but English trained. But if you're of a certain age cohort that remembers that great rivalry, it was incredible. And if you're not, you should look it up, because you can see the races on YouTube and stuff like that. That song, Michael, I think it was Michael Dempsey sent it to us. Thank you, Michael. And was written by Dominic Behan, a brother of Brendan Behan. I loved a bit of commentary there, by the way, at the end as well, where Arkle was described as the best horse in the British Isles. Now, I saw Arkle's skeleton in the Irish National Stud decades ago. I don't know, is it still there? But we were also told by Don Kelly on the email yesterday that another Irish horse called Ambush, was it an Irish horse? No. Yes, it was. Ambush the Second. It won the 1900 entry Grand National, and that was bred out in Narromore. So interesting times and interesting links indeed in regards to all of that. And speaking of that, I'm sure, I don't know, Nick Henderson, does that bring back any memories to you?
It doesn't. It's before my time, unfortunately.
Okay.
But yeah, I take an interest in racing, but not of that time, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a great. Arkell considered the greatest chaser of all time. Milhouse was an incredible horse as well, and I think there was another horse called Flying Bolt. Now I know little or nothing about racing. I'm just a bluffer when it comes to that. So I'm sure my much more knowledgeable listeners out there will offer their opinions. WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97, WhatsApp or text. Email studio at kfmradio.com, or indeed you can call us and speak to Ciara on 0458 98 999. We'll be talking to Ciara very shortly with those Kildare County Council T's and C's attached to local authority housing. You've issued your 2020 annual review of Ireland's international protection process, as we call it. In regard, the report is your contribution to the European Council on Refugees and Exiles Information Database. Information on the protection procedures, reception conditions, detention and content of international protection across 23 countries. Nick, how are we doing?
We're doing not so well, Clem, really. This report, we published it this week, and it aims to give lots of statistics and data and information about our protection process, our asylum process. Protection is just another word for asylum. One of the big features of last year, 2020, was a huge decrease in the number of people seeking asylum in Ireland, 67% decrease. In Europe itself, in the European Union itself, there was a 32% decrease in the number of people seeking asylum. One of the big things that is currently afflicting, and I think I've spoken to you about this before, that is afflicting our asylum process is delays. So if you claimed asylum today, it's likely, and your case wasn't prioritized, it would, it's likely that you wouldn't get a decision for as long as 18 months or 17 and a half months. And compared to other European Union countries, there's some terrible decision-making waiting times in some countries such as Cyprus, but other countries, say Austria, are able to do it in 4 months, the Netherlands 6 months, Belgium 7 months. So in terms of delays, we're certainly not doing well.
And is the reduction in numbers that you referred to there earlier, is that as much to do with COVID and the restrictions on movement, or what else?
Indeed, I guess it's almost completely that. Huge reduction in international travel that we are all familiar with and aware of, and that has consequently made it harder for people to flee their country, wherever that may be, and make their way to Europe. So yeah, almost completely due to the pandemic, particularly if you compare it to 2019, when there were something like 4,600 applications for protection. So yeah, almost exclusively down to the pandemic.
And the applicants in 2020, am I correct there that there were 1,566? I'm looking at a table in your report.
Yeah,
but that is a pending on decisions of 5,279.
Yeah, that's one of the key problems that we have at the moment, and that's related to delays. So 5,279 people who have a case pending at the International Protection Office, which is the first instance decision-making body. Now, I think the IPO, that body would say, well, some of those cases are no longer live, but nevertheless, a significant proportion are. We believe at least 4,500. So that's a huge number of cases that are backed up at that decision-making stage. One of the problems that we've had in the last year is that while there has been a decrease in the number of people seeking asylum, and that could have been an opportunity to reduce delays and backlogs because of our level 5 COVID restrictions, personal interviews that take place have been cancelled or postponed, and they are still postponed. For example, in 2021, they've been at the International Protection Office, they've been cancelled to this day. That may change in the coming weeks, hopefully, as the country opens up. But yeah, delays and a backlog are two of our key problems that we have.
I see most of the applicants in 2020, Nigeria 208, Somalia 167, Pakistan 87, South Africa 84, Zimbabwe 82. We look at the median length of stay in direct provision at 27 months, 2 years and 3 months. Much has been made, Nick, in recent times about, you know, children in quarantine having to stay in Dublin hotels and the conditions from them. And there was much, much associated commentary then. Why haven't we heard more about the large numbers of children who have been not in quarantine, but have been in such very, very tight, unsuitable facilities in direct provision, not for 10 days, but for, on this basis, average stay, 27 months?
Yeah, indeed. And just this week, actually, the Ombudsman for Children published a very important report detailing the harm that is caused to children from living in direct provision.
And 1,985 children were in direct provision at the end of December.
Yeah, so it's a large number of children, large number of kids in the pandemic. Direct provision was already an extremely difficult place to live, but the pandemic and school closures and so on has made that their situation even harder. One of the frustrating things, I suppose, of that report and the situation of children is that we've known of these problems for the last 20 years. I checked out through our archives after the Ombudsman released his report on Tuesday, and we published a report in July of 2001, so 20 years ago, detailing almost exactly the same problems. So we're not learning from our mistakes, and it is harming our most treasured, or what should be our most treasured group in society, which is children and young people.
And have we still a scenario in direct provision, by the way, which I see there were 670 COVID-19 cases between March 2020 and February 2021. Does it still pertain in direct provision that people who are not members of the same family unit can end up sharing rooms?
Yeah, indeed. And we did some work on that recently. That number has actually gone up, Clem. It's 1,800 as of the end of March 2021. In April 2020, it was 1,700. So there's actually been an increase during the pandemic of the number of people sharing a bedroom with a non-family member, which is contrary to the medical advice, the government advice, the chief medical officer advice, and so on. So there's been approximately 670 COVID cases in direct provision during the pandemic, which is actually, I think, about 8% of the total population. So 8% of people living in direct provision have likely had COVID.
Yes, and I come back all the time to those 1,985 children who are living in direct provision. As I say, much said about children having to live in a hotel room for 10 days for quarantine, but people need to get their heads around the idea of nearly 2,000 children living on average up to 27 months in these conditions in direct provision, not to mention the mixing of non-family units in this areas as well. The most pressing thing of all, in your view, arising from this report, Henderson, is it the delays in dealing with appeals?
Yeah, I think it's delays at first instance. The delays at appeals are manageable to an extent. It's 9 months for a median processing time for an appeal, which isn't great, but at first instance, it's, as I say, it's nearly 18 months. And I suspect that amount of time, that delay, will continue for the foreseeable future because we've been our decision making processes have been shut down so far in 2020 and most of so far in 2021 and most of 2020. So unless we can deal with delays and reduce waiting times, then it's harmful to people in the system, and then also it makes it very difficult for us and for the government to meet their commitment and intention to end direct provision, because we have almost 7,000 people in the system.
Right, it's the Asylum Information Database, the country report for Ireland by the Irish Refugee Council, the 2020 update, and you can find and read the entire report pertaining to Ireland and indeed further afield on the website asyluminEurope.org. That's asyluminEurope.org. And the CEO of the Irish Refugee Council, Nick Henderson. Thank you indeed, Nick, for your time.
Thank you.
Good morning to you. Okay, some disturbing statistics on that. After the break, we'll hear from Kieran Noble regarding the T's and C's around getting a local authority house in Kildare and the conditions you have to abide by. And Owen will be telling us about a listener who has contacted us from the Kilmeade area who's alleging significant antisocial behaviour in the rural area.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
Okay, let's catch up on some of the messages. Clem, what was the professor talking about? Nowhere in the literature does it say you have to wait 4 weeks after the AstraZeneca vaccine. It does, actually. I'm looking at it. From the 10th of May, indoor private home visiting can be permitted without masks or social distances in the following cases, one of which is mentioned: persons who have received the AstraZeneca vaccine 4 weeks after dose one. That's where it says it in relation to that. Yes, Clem, says another listener, I know of people who were fully vaccinated and had to go to hospital and picked up COVID in there as well. I know, but it can happen. But the one thing that's clear is that the symptoms you would experience if you get COVID after being vaccinated are much, much more mild than you would have if you weren't vaccinated. Clem, any tips on the racing today? Yes, Laura, we'll have Dara Fitzpatrick will be along to mark your card around a quarter to 20 to 11. You're a bluffer when it comes to more than racing, Clem Ryan, says the listener. Thanks, Chair. Good man. Keep going. Last week we were Muppets. And I admit I'm a bluffer, Chair, in regards to the racing. Do you admit to being a bluffer on anything, I wonder? Well, I'll leave that to yourself and see how that might go. I look at some of the messages coming in. Antisocial behaviour is widespread, says a listener. It's time the guards stopped worrying about how far people are travelling and stepped in to deal with that. Good morning, Clem. It's right and democratic that citizens should have their say on environmental issues. Can you warn people that an 083 scam is doing the rounds again? Don't answer it and don't engage. Good morning, Clem. In the last number of weeks, everyone in the media was praising Rachel Blackmore to the highest level. I know she's drawn a blank so far. That's the ups and downs of racing. And some listener says, what a ridiculous statement to make. She is no better than any other jockey. Give us a break. She's an absolute superb jockey. She's the outgoing champion jockey, is she not? She, look what she done at Cheltenham in entry. So come on. Let's be real now in regards to that. Clem, the Indian variant now found in France in the La Garonne and La Bouche-du-Rhin district, people need to respect all the safety protocols. Did you see the scenes in Belfast this morning? Retail opening. We'll be locked down until the 4th of June. What's going to happen? Of course, we're going to get a lot of cross-border shopping, will we not, in regards to that? Happy 18th birthday to Niamh Goggin from his high. That came in earlier on to Dara on the breakfast programme from all the family. Okay, what am I going to next? I'm going to Ciara Noble. Ciara, you have a list of the terms and conditions. People often ask us, you know, what conditions do people have to apply by in terms of when they get a local authority house in Kildare? Over to you.
Yeah, so this is the Kildare County Council Tenant Deposit Scheme. So the deposit amount for each house type will be as follows: €150 for an older person dwelling or a one-bedroom property, €300 for a 2 to 3 bedroom property, or €400 for a 4 or more bedroom property. So when the deposit has been paid, the tenant will be written to and informed that the amount is being retained as a deposit. So subject to the proper maintenance, it says here, of the property, and in event of the property being returned to the council in good condition, you will be refunded in full at termination or transfer of the tenancy. So in the event of termination or transfer of a tenancy, the tenant will be required to give at least 4 weeks' notice in writing, leave the property in reasonable condition in terms of general wear and tear, clear the property of all furniture, goods and other items. Obviously, don't forget the attic, it's noted here. Remove all rubbish from the house, garden sheds, etc. Leave in place any fittings. That's, for example, the fireplace, flooring, shed, if it has been installed by the tenant during the their tenancy unless permission is granted in writing by the council to remove them. And then prior to the tenant leaving the property, an inspection will be carried out. The inspection is to check the condition, obviously, of the property, and if there is damage to the property, above normal wear and tear, missing items, cleaning required to be undertaken, rubbish to be removed, unpaid rent, then the associated cost will obviously be deducted from the deposit. And in the event of a dispute with regard to the payment or the refund of a deposit, an appeal can be submitted to the local authority, and the chief executive, in this case of Kildare County Council, will appoint an appropriate person to consider the appeal and determine the case.
That it, Ciara. Thank you very much indeed on that. In a few minutes' time, we'll go to that Kilmeade item that we got from a listener. But first, I want to go to Councillor Peter Hamilton of the Green Party in the Clanmaynooth Municipal District regarding the Kildare County Council meeting motion. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Clem. How are you doing? One bluffer to another, I guess.
Speak for yourself, I beg your pardon. Peter, you've got a very, very long report. If you might just reprise it in maybe less than a minute, if you would. You had a motion in that you wanted the council to put in place more clear and concrete measures for the protection of hedgerows and mature trees in all developments. Why has there been... two elements of this, maybe, that developers have not been delivering, or that established mature trees have been removed when new developments start?
Yeah, all of the above, Clem. The vegetation that are mature habitats, they're huge mature habitats, or hedgerows, or trees, and even grasslands, and they're the poor cousin in all of the planning. You know, you see in the response I got a very, very long list of regulations that are well applied, and they've been improved. They've been improved a lot. But what happens is it doesn't get the scrutiny and the reviews. It's kind of, you know, all the other issues are looked at. A lot more is removed in the plan than needs to be. There's accidental removals. And there's no consequences for these accidental removals, you know. We have cases in planning where heritage buildings have been removed. And there's a few famous ones where they've been reinstated, you know. The debate over the O'Rahilly House in Dublin 4 is one at the moment, you know. They seem to disappear at the weekend. And a bit of that happens with our nature. So what we were looking for was a couple of things, to associate the nature with the bonds, and the council agreed to look into adding that. It's not part of the bonds at present. To look at more review, more education, so that people are tuned into that, so that it's a part of the process. And also to look at some invasive species. We have invasive species that we're busy planting. The main one is bay laurel. Hedges everywhere. Most people don't know that it's a bit like the rhododendron. It takes over. It's not natural, and almost nothing lives in it, as against our natural hedgerow that's teeming with life. And it's listed in the National Pollinator Plan as an invasive species besides rhododendron and sycamore. So we wanted to get that added in as well. So three things really, including it in the bond, a bit more enforcement and review, and lastly, the issue of the invasive species and getting them into the planning with more natural.
All right.
Yeah, so that's Shanae
and Gail. All right, everybody will certainly welcome that. Before I let you go, Peter, you are chairman of the Kildare County Council Climate Action Strategic Policy Committee. I'm looking at the minutes there of a meeting held on the 15th of April. You absented yourself from the chair because you made a submission in regards to, I think, this whole area of decarbonisation, which is a countrywide effort, including here in County Kildare, to designate areas regarding the reduction of emissions. I see, for example, that in regards to Kildare, the DZ identification process, as they call it, decarbonisation zone, there was a non-statutory public consultation opened on the 16th of March, closed on the 26th of March. 9 submissions were received, 5 specific settlement areas. Now, the settlement, various things were examined in those settlements as regards all sorts of thing, from third level collaboration with Maynooth University, a DART extension planned for Maynooth, early review of the Maynooth local area plan, an existing and proposed cycle and pedestrian linkages, so on and so forth. What's your view from the perspective of Maynooth? You made the submission.
Yeah, and that's why it was appropriate to step out of the chair. We created a community submission, 1 of 9, as you state. Four groups came together: our sustainable energy community, which is set up by the SEAI and the council to drive these issues. I founded that in 2018 and have chaired it since. Our community council, our Tidy Towns and Zero Waste Maynooth all put their names forward with their chairs and committees supporting the campaign. And we were supported by 27 other community organisations, including just about every piece of Maynooth University campus, the Green Campus, the Icarus Climate Change Organisation, the Geography Department, that is actually nationally respected as a climate expert, and our schools. So we had a hugely broad-based community submission. And because I put my name to it, because I was the chair of this, it wouldn't have been correct to do anything else.
Okay, I want to just mention some of the recommendations, as we say, that have emerged from this. Strong mobilised community in place in Maynooth, an advanced stage with community energy master plan to retrofit 2,500 homes, including community renewable energy options. We've mentioned Maynooth University getting a partnership with them. We've mentioned cycle and pedestrian linkages, the DART extension planned for Maynooth, the reviewing the local area plan, and what's called that there is a strategic transportation assessment underway, including what's called community permeability plan in place. Manuad de Nomad. What does that mean, Maynooth, in 10 minutes?
Yeah. Paris, 15 minutes. I can't just put it out in French at the moment. You're very good at that. You probably have it. The Paris 15 minutes suggests that each community region can do most of the things it needs to do in a 15-minute walk or cycle, which is 1.5 kilometres. There's nice bars and restaurants, there's walks, there's a park, there's a couple of metro stations. And the concept there is, in the county development plan, that you look at Maynooth as clusters, you look at every village as clusters. I said Maynooth because it's a decarbonized zone. Our job is to find pathfinder things and bring them forward for fast followers to follow. And that's the idea for the other towns, they would be fast followers. So you design Maynooth into quarters, and you then work forward that the plan has almost a mini street in each quarter. And there are a couple greenfields, and Bowfield have little centres that are quiet and dull, but if they're designated and supported and invested in, they become little village clusters that you can walk to for your Saturday
coffee. All right, one key thing that I'd like to point out here. This plan, while Maynooth is the area we're dealing with in terms of this and the submissions that went in, this plan is applicable to any area in the county. Am I not correct in that?
The idea is that there's pathfinders. Port Leash was the first.
Yes.
Port Leash has worked very hard.
Maynooth will be the pathfinder, or if you like, the leading example in Kildare, which will be done, this will be applied first. And then I imagine the strategy would be that learning from the Maynooth experience to then spread it out into other towns and areas around the county.
Quickly, 3 settlements came forward with very good community proposals, and the community strength helps because you know there's going to be an acceptance. Newbridge, Selbridge, Manister Evan probably shone through in the submissions and the assessments.
They did indeed. I saw those, and Manister Evan, Kevin Duffy, I think, was behind that particular one over there.
He was indeed, and we've spoken several times about it, and we discussed the fast follower idea because we need to be doing this in 20 towns by 2030. So,
how many towns?
We have 20 towns. We have to do this everywhere. So
I know, right around the country. But in Kildare, we're looking at Maynooth will be the initial, the pilot programme, and then possibly after that, Newbridge, Manister Evan and Selbridge.
Yeah, well, let's be careful. It'll be a sort of a self-selecting and criteria-based, so I don't get carried away.
All right.
You know, Leixlip did very well in the assessment as well. So
all right, okay. It's quite complex and quite detailed, and we just wanted to have a look at it today.
And becomes political, as I'm sure you can imagine.
I certainly can, Peter. Yeah, submissions of the pilot zone, by the way, to be in by the 31st of April, there'll be baseline analysis, implementation of the plan to include an identified range of projects, which includes electricity sourcing, transport and mobility, enhanced building energy efficiency, biodiversity, and what's called carbon sequestration. I'll leave you to figure out that one yourself. And item 4 will be a climate action plan, which Kildare County Council will develop that plan into 2022. Just an overview, a taste of this decarbonisation project to reduce emissions here in County Kildare, with the pilot programme beginning and being recommended to take place in Maynooth. That's Green Party Councillor Peter. Thank you indeed for that, and we'll return to that issue, I'm sure, with other councillors as well. Peter Hamilton, Goramila Magut, Peter. Right, in response to the listener who said Rachel Blackmore is no different to any other jockey, if she doesn't have the horses, it just shows. She hasn't had a winner just yet. She might get one today, I think. Dara will be with us in a moment, but one listener responded to that and said, we're a nation of begrudges, Clem. KFM has been a lifeline to people in the county, and Rachel Blackmore is the apple of most Irish people's eyes. Keep up the bluffing. I will, actually. Yeah, sure, why not? I mean, I don't claim ever to be an expert on racing. I just have a working knowledge of it for the purposes of the programme. Now, regarding antisocial behaviour, which is a problem in many areas around the county, Owen, we received a very interesting letter from a listener in the Kilmead. Now, that's K-I-L-M-E-A-D, just in case people think we're talking about Kilmeag. It's Kilmead area, I suppose, between Kilcullen and Athy, just to give it its location. And this letter contains pretty serious allegations. We're not going to give the name of the woman in question. We've spoken to her to get her bona fides in the matter. Read the letter for us, Owen.
Yeah, so it came in to us earlier on this week. It says, I hope you don't mind me putting pen to paper old style. I heard you were speaking about the swallows on this morning's programme. I'm sorry I missed it. It's with a heavy heart that I must tell you about what is happening here in Kilmead, a small village just outside of Athy. We have a number of people killing all the wild birds with slingshots and marbles. This is going on for over a year. The swallows that came last April 2020 were more than halved by the time they were due to fly south in September. You could take a walk anywhere in Kilmead and you will find all kinds of birds dead on the side of the road. Swallows, sparrows, crows, pigeons, magpies, etc. This is a disgraceful pastime, and every time we see these people, they are never without slingshots and marbles. They have broken car windows and house windows. I have spoken to people who are sick picking up marbles from their own gardens. I have lived in this area all my life and I have never witnessed anything so cruel. It's a nice village, always was, until this problem arose. The letters go on to say that at the moment, we all feel like we are living in the ghetto. I mentioned to the Gardaí about the killing of the birds. They advised me to take photographs of the people with their slingshots, but that would be more than my life is worth if they caught me. It's a terrible situation out here, and now we have another whole summer of this to look forward to. Large numbers of people congregating, horses on the green area, and local kids have to stay indoors because these people have taken over. They seem to do as they please. One rule for us, a different for them. Do you know of any organisation that looks after wildlife? Where can this problem be sorted? Because I and a lot of others have had enough. Clem, I hope you can read this letter out. Someone may be able to help. I thank you for taking the time to read this. I hope you understand that I don't want my name to be mentioned. And obviously, like you said, Clem, I gave this woman a ring yesterday or the day before just to clarify the situation there. She explained it to me. Obviously, very distraught on the phone, and as are quite a lot of residents in the Kilmeade area, because it seems like a massive problem.
Now, she's alleging two things. One, that there is this slingshot, as she says, being used to kill birds all over the place. All I can say is, if they're managing to kill birds with slingshots, they must be, they should be going to the Olympics in terms of skill. But there's obviously an issue with that, with car windows and house windows being broken, alleges this writer from Kilmeade. And secondly, then, she says that the old historic graveyard, that there is an encampment in there, and that and she says that there's serious litter problems, etc., etc., environmental issues. What we're asking is, we checked with a local councillor who said that he wasn't aware of the issues. We asked the councillor to come back to us. We haven't heard from him since. But we're asking other residents of Kilmeade, though the contents of that letter, are they an accurate representation of problems in what is a very small rural area of Kildare? Let us know. Kilmeade residents, we're waiting to hear from you.
KFM's Daily Live Punchestown Update with bookmaker Dara Fitzpatrick.
Good morning, Dara.
Good morning, Clem. How are you this morning?
At least one listener says, who's Rachel Blackmore? What would she be if she didn't have the horses she gets to ride?
Look, Rachel Blackmore had a brilliant Cheltenham, had a brilliant entry, and it just shows you the ways of the world with sport. She wouldn't be feeling the love this week. She hasn't had no winner in the first 3 days of the Punchestown Festival. But Rachel Blackmore is still Rachel Blackmore, and I think she could come back today. I think Honeysuckle will win the champion hurdle today. But look, it just shows you the ups and the downs and the ins and the outs.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's a credit to her sport, and she's brought her sport a long way this year.
Absolutely. I think that fairly sums up that. Let's get underway then with the Paddy Power Hunters Chase. Seven go to post at 3:40 today.
To be honest with you, I don't really know that much about this race. Rewrite the Rules is the favourite at around 4-5 for Shark Hanlon and Tom Hamilton. I'm going to go with the local horse here, and it's Alpha Male, trained by Peter Maher. He loves these type of races, and I think Alpha Male will be there or thereabouts in the first race.
Okay, 4:15 Alpha Male then, 4:15 EMS Copiers Novice Handicap Chase, a field of 16.
Yeah, a field of 16 here. I'm going to tip up JP McManus to definitely win this race. He runs four, and I think he's mob handed. I think he has the race in the bag. The horse I like in the race is the 11 horse School by Hours. I've watched this horse run a few times this year. I wouldn't say he's been trying too hard any time this year. I think today covered his day, and around the 6-1, I think this horse will definitely be there or thereabouts. And another horse I like in the race is the 5 horse Dostal Phil, trained by Philip Hobbs in England. So it's 2 here against the field. It's the 5 horse Dostal Phil and the 11 horse School by Hours.
All right, at 4:50 rather, the Hanlon Concrete, our great friends of this station are Hanlon Concrete. I have to say hello to Michelle and all the gang. The Hanlon Concrete Mayor's Handicap Chase.
Yeah, great friends, and great friends of not just KFM but the entire county. They contribute hugely to the local community out there in Robertstown and all around the county, and I just want to wish them well and thank them for sponsoring today. The fancy 2 horse in this race, Clem, the 2 horse Courtmaid, trained by Tom Mullins and ridden by 7-pound claimer Jack Foley. This would be great to see this horse win, and it's owned by Rory Larkin, who has a business in Nace, RFL Steel, and it'd be great just to see it winning for him and the county. And the 10 horse Wait and See, I think this horse is the plot in this race. Really good chance, actually finished 3rd I think to Cole Reeby very recently, has been running all over the place. Wait and See each way here, and the 2 horse Courtmaid.
All right, now the first of the grade ones of today then is at 5:25. It's the Paddy Power Champion Hurdle. You've already mentioned Honeysuckle.
Yeah, look, I'm speaking with my heart here, Clem. I'd love to see Honeysuckle winning. The mare, she's undefeated. She's undefeated, and she absolutely sloshed in the champion hurdle in Cheltenham. But it has to come with a little bit of a health warning, Clem. Like, Henry de Bromhead's horses haven't been firing this week, and he's fired a blank so far. He hasn't had a winner this week, and that's unused for Danny Brom. So is there something wrong? And I notice in the 6 o'clock race that he's withdrawn Bob Ollinger, so that in itself, that's a trend by Henry de Bromhead as well. So that has to be an egg. I'd just love to see this winning for a race, and so I'm going to tip up Honeysuckle here as the obvious winner. The 7-horse Epitante, trained by Nicky Henderson, ran in the champion hurdle, and I just I was chatting to a fellow last night, and he said this horse is buzzing at home. A brilliant mare, won the champion hurdle not this year but the previous year. So for each way of purposes, it's the 7-horse Epitante, but I would just love to see Honeysuckle winning and to just continue her winning success.
All right, let's see what happens there. Moving on to another Grade 1 at 6 o'clock. Nice €59,000. By the way, there's 147,000 quid for the Paddy Power Champion Hurdle Grade 1 is the prize fund there.
And it's not only that. It's not only that. They've put up a 100,000 bonus as well. So if Gushan, the 4-horse late wins, or the 7-horse Epitante wins for English trained horses, there's two of them in the race, the 4-horse Gulshan and the 7-horse Epitante. So if either of them wins, the prize fund increased to almost $250,000.
Wow, that's some money in the current climate, I'll tell you.
Yeah, unbelievable money.
Now, the novice hurdle at 6 o'clock, then just a small field of 6.
Just a very small field of 6, and it's cut up again since morning. The 4-horse, it's an important one to mark off your papers out there this morning. It was definitely going to start favourite at 1 in Cheltenham, but this is a non-runner, Bob Ollinger. So it's all about the 4-horse here. Gallagher, the Maneil, trained by Willie Mullins. Very hard to oppose this fella. I think this fella will come up the straight on his own. And for forecast purposes in this race, it's the 1-horse Ashdale Bob. But I cannot support Gallagher. So I cannot oppose Gallagher, Dumaneel.
All right. And your French is wonderfully improving. Monsieur Dar.
Kev, you're bringing me on in deep. It won't be Gael the cat classes we'll be having shortly. It will be French classes.
Oh, good man. Right. Free Fuckle Friday and all of that. Well said there. Now, back to the bread and butter stuff. A Hunter's Chase at 6:35 with a field of 14.
Yeah, field of 14, but you can put a line through a lot of these in my humble opinion, and I'm going to make it between the 2-horse, the 3-horse and the 4-horse. And if you were to ask me to back a horse in the race, I'd back the 3-horse Bob and Co, trained by Paul Nichols. Anytime this horse has won, has jumped clear, it's won. So it's been pulled up, it's won, pulled up and won. So I think that Bob and Co will beat. Billaway ran an entry, didn't run that well in entry. So for that reason, I'm going to tip up here the 3-horse Bob and Co as the likely winner. And if you're asking me to up another horse in the race, I'd up the 4-horse Cod de Beulah. But it's Bob and Co for me all the way.
All right, and a novice hurdle then follows that one, and again a field of 16. That's a 7:05.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, Clem, I'm going to actually have a bet myself in this, and I don't always have a bet. I don't very, very seldom have a bet. I'm going to have a few quid on the 10 horse here, MC Muldoon. I think this is my nap of today. I think this will come home on its own for Willie Mullins and Patrick Mullins. If you'd ask me to back another horse in the race, I'd back the 12 horse each way, Fire Attack, but it's the 10 horse MC Muldoon all the way for me here.
All right, I don't even know if you want to do 5 decades of the Rosary on the 7:35.
It's impossible, Sam. I'm after going up and down this about 3 or 4 times. Yeah. Can't find the winner of it. The 13 horse, just from a personal point of view, I'd like to see Sean and Bernard and Ryan having their huge supporters of Punchdown, and I'd like to see them having the winner. It's a horse called Stone Mad, and sometimes I think myself that I am actually Stone Mad. So for that reason, I'm going to tip up that one. Feeling a little bit sad this morning, Clem. Friday of Punchestown, and we're not going. Just...
Oh, yeah.
Look, we will be back next year. This should be Ladies' Day, Clem, and all the ladies should be in the hairdressers. Everywhere should be buzzing around the county this morning.
What you're forgetting is this should be KFM Day, because...
Correct and right, Clem.
For the last 17, 18 years, we have sponsored the opening race, which would have been the KFM Hunter's Chase for the for the Bishop's Court Cup. Kildare people, particularly the other trainers who mightn't be making the limelight all the time, placed great store in. And also we'd have the KFM a Corporate Day, which would be wining and dining until the late hours.
And Kira would be in the hairdressers this morning against herself, set up to go to that Corporate Day, and so would Owen. Look, we miss Punchestown. Monty wished them well. Thank them for running the festival behind closed doors. And please God, we'll be all back safe and sound this time next year.
So I say all of us. And Dara, you'll be speaking to the selfsame Owen, but it'll be tomorrow afternoon. He's sitting in on Saturday Sports Beat between 2 and 6. So he'll arrange later with you.
He can come on to me at any stage tomorrow, and that's good.
Lovely. Dara Fitzpatrick, thank you, Dara. Have a good day.
Thanks, Clem. Mind yourself.
And you
bye
too.
Bye, and stay safe.
KFM's Daily Live Punchestown Update with bookmaker Dara Fitzpatrick.
Indeed, and we'll be marking your card on Saturday Sports Beat tomorrow with Owen Beattie between 2 and 6. He'll be joining Dara, I'm sure, sometime between 2 and 3 to mark the Saturday card. And on Sunday, a bit of history for us, because we will have a woman presenting Sunday Sport. And the woman in question is none other than the legend herself, Ciara Noble. So join her on Sunday, give her lots of encouragement, and I know she'll be great, very entertaining and very informative, as Owen will be tomorrow as well. And Owen, you have a little bit of a racing item before we finish up. We're not going to get to our Free Focal Friday, unfortunately. Ta and Tom Egdalamu agus Camid Bulachan Bohar. Yes, Owen.
Yeah, so a listener just rang in there while we were talking to Dara, and obviously, you know, over the last couple of days we've heard great stories about Kildare connections in terms of horses over in Cheltenham and Aintree and also Punchestown, but this one I think is just fantastic. I think it was back in the 60s or the 70s, there was a horse called Chimney Smoke, which was owned and trained by the Cashes in Clane, and it was running races in Punchestown, but they had no way of transporting the horse from Clane to Punchestown. So what did they do? They had to walk the horse the whole way from Clane to Punchestown, and when it got to the course, it won the first race and it won the last race of the Punchestown Festival, and then they walked it the whole way back to Clane. I think that's a fantastic story, the Cashes there, and I'm sure people in Clane will remember that if you were, you know, of a certain age during the 60s or the 70s, of a horse being walked. Chimney Smoke, it was called. And good story there and good local connections.
Been walked all the way.
Yeah, walked the whole way from Clane to Punchestown and back.
And fit to race as well as that. Well done. Great, great story. And we're not finished. We have our poem today is on a racing theme. A listener says, "We're not a bad little country, are we? We've the best woman rider in the world and the best boxer in the world in Rachel Blackmore and Katie Taylor. And we have the best sports presenter in the world on Sunday Sports Beat from Sunday, Ciara Noble as well. How about that?"
KFM's Reflection Timeout.
Okay, now our poem for today, of course, is on a racing theme, just to mark Punchestown. Before we do that, by the way, I just want to say we're on a public holiday weekend. People are going to be out and about, everything else. Let's all be here on Tuesday morning, okay? Let's be all here each Saturday morning, Sunday morning, Monday morning, Tuesday morning. Wherever you're going, take care. Drive safely. Whether you're cycling or walking, wear the high-vis vests. Motorists, be careful of each other. Every public holiday weekend, families are plunged into mourning. So we'd like to get that road safety message out from us all here on KFM. And of course, the COVID message, we stated often enough, you know what we're talking about. Let's do this together, folks, in regards to that. Our poem was sent by one of our local historians, Brian McCabe, who will be featured next Thursday on the local history of Johnstown. He said he saw it in Nace on a shop window and he had to laugh, and people must have been wondering why he was smiling looking at the window. Well, the name of the poem was "And They're Off," and we leave you with this today. "When I go to the races, flat hurdles or chases, there's plenty of help and advice on which horses to back, and though there's no lack, it doesn't come cheap at the price. The man on the gate said, 'Back number 8 in the first, for I swear it can't fail.